Ooh, good morning. My name is Rosalie Nord. I can say that because my husband now is not the alcoholic that got me into this program. And yes, I cry a whole lot. But I'll straighten up in just a minute. One of my sisters introduced me to a new boyfriend of hers. This was when we were much older. She had been married and divorced. I was divorced. And anyhow, she introduced me to this fellow, and she said, "This is my sister Rosalie. She cries a lot, but she's not a crybaby." And so, when I walked into this program, it was in January of 1981. Thank you. I had just retired from working 30 years for General Motors. I had a husband and a young son at home yet. And I knew there was something wrong with what was going on in my family, but I couldn't put my finger on it for a long time. I finally started checking out Al-Anon meetings, and I didn't go to them. I just checked out where they were. And I knew where three or four of them were. But I didn't start coming to Al-Anon until the night that my husband decided that he wanted me to make an apple pie. And it was Saturday night. It was 9 o'clock. And I said, "I'm not going to make that pie tonight. I'll make it tomorrow morning." And he said, "Well, I'll make it myself then." So he went into the kitchen, and I was watching TV, and all of a sudden, this big noise from the kitchen, and he had my young son, who was 14, by the back of the neck, throwing him out the door and saying, "Get out and don't come back." And I said, "Okay, Kevin, go get your coat. I'll be right out. Get in the car. I'll be right out." And we ran away from home that night. And I stayed gone for 5 months before I finally came back. Now, this was a house that I had lived in for most of my life. Anyhow, my married life. And raised all my kids there. I have six, by the way. Six boys. And I came from a family of all girls, so you can imagine what a thing that was, because, you know, I wasn't used to boys. I liked them, but, I wasn't used to them. Anyway, Kevin and I left that night, and I had no idea where I was going to go when I got in that car. I finally ended up at one of my son's houses, and I explained to him what was going on, and I stayed the night at his house. And the next morning, I called a girlfriend of mine who had a house in Michigan, and that's where I'm from, by the way. She had this house that stood empty all winter long because she went to Florida for the winter time. So I called her up and I said, "Is there anybody in your house?" And she said, "No." I said, "Do you mind if I move in for a little while? I've just left home." She said, "Go right ahead." So I moved into her house, went back and got a clothes basket full of clothes to get us started out, and I stayed gone for 5 months. During that time, my husband kept calling. He'd call me in the middle of the night. I finally learned how to shut the phone off so that I couldn't be woken up in the middle of the night. And I cried, and I cried, and I cried. But one of the first things that I did after I had run away, just the following Wednesday, I found my first Al-Anon meeting. And I cried all through that meeting. I didn't hear anything anybody said except, "Keep coming back. And hey, we're going to lunch right afterwards. Would you like to go?" And that's how I started my Al-Anon program. I went to just a couple of meetings at first, and I didn't hear very much. I mean, I cried all the time. I just didn't get what they were saying. All I knew was that I felt better when I was with this group of people. And you're going to have to forgive me a little bit because I'm getting older and I forget things. And so just started taking some medicine to prevent Alzheimer's disease from getting too bad too fast. It's not going to work. I got rid of it. I threw it all up the other day when I took it. And I thought, well, I guess I don't want that anymore. Anyway, help me, Shirley. Pardon me? Yes, I went to my first meeting and decided to go to more. I also, I wanted to tell you how I first heard about Al-Anon too. When I was still working, I worked on the United Way program for a while as a volunteer. And one of the things that I did while I was on that committee was we went to the National Council on Alcoholism and heard a speaker talk. And he talked about feelings, he talked about addictions, he talked about several things. This man was the head of the National Council on Alcoholism in Flint, Michigan. His name was Johnny Crane, and I can say that because he's no longer living. But he was an inspiration to me from the very first time I saw him. Johnny Crane was one of the people who started the hugging tradition. He hugged everybody everywhere. And I was really very grateful that I had met him early because then I knew where to go to Al-Anon. My first meeting was at the Arid Club in Flint, Michigan. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of an Arid Club. I bet you have somewhere because they're all over the country. Anyhow, my first meeting was a beginner's meeting, and we just talked about the first three steps. And I listened, and I listened, but I still didn't figure out what it was I needed to do about this alcoholic. I finally figured out that you don't do anything about them. You let them alone, and maybe they'll sober up. Maybe. Mine never did. I divorced him after about a year in the program. Somebody told me not to do anything really rash, make any big decisions when I first got in the program. And they said, give it at least a year before you make any. And one day this friend of mine walked into the meeting and she said, I think I'm going to go file for divorce. And I thought, that sounds like a good idea. And I did it and she didn't. But she did do it later. Jerry kept getting worse. He kept, even though I finally got the divorce, he kept going by the house and checking and seeing where I was and seeing where we were. And so I finally decided that I needed to sell that house and get out of there so that he wouldn't be able to be checking on me all the time. And I did that. And I moved into an apartment with my son. Didn't stay there very long. He really wanted to be living in the Kersley District where he had been going to school. And so I moved back into the Kersley District. Anyhow, This is what I was afraid of, Shirley.
You're doing great.
Okay. I came here in 1950. I came here when I was 54 years old. That's one of the things I wanted to say. And I'll tell you about my family. My father and mother were both, well, my mother was an orphan. My father was an illegitimate child in the 1890s, which was, and his mother would not have anything to do with him. They were really hard luck kids. They struggled and worked and so hard all their lives to achieve what they needed to have to raise a family, and they just had all the bad luck. Like I said, I came from a family of all girls. When the youngest was born, my mother died, and we took care of each other from then on. I was only 6 at the time, but my older sisters and several housekeepers took care of us until we got to the point where I was the oldest one at home now, and we didn't have a housekeeper anymore, and I was now in charge of the two younger sisters. Seems like I've always been taking care of somebody. I took care of my older sisters' little babies when they started having babies. And we would have a housekeeper once in a while. Dad had a hard time keeping somebody there to take care of us. And my dad, to my knowledge, I only saw him drink maybe 2 or 3 times in his whole life. Maybe once to cure a cold, and he got drunk and he got silly. But he only did that once in a while. It would be like on a hot summer day, he might have a glass of beer or something because he was out working all the time. My dad worked probably 12 hours a day, and he worked hard. He worked in the factory, and he also worked at home. He grew our food, and he was just out there all the time doing something. Built the house, did all kinds of things. Like I said, I have 6 sisters. All of us married alcoholics except one. She married a workaholic. In fact, she got 2 of them workaholics. She's really well off right now. The rest of us are kind of struggling. I'd never faced the fact that of how many alcoholics there were in the family until I had to face the fact with my husband. And as I started coming to Al-Anon, and as I started to get acquainted with all the people and heard their stories, I started going back over my life. And what I finally realized was that the first time I was affected by alcoholism was when I was 4 years old. And this was Prohibition time. But there was a bootlegger's place in back of where we lived. And I wandered in and out of there as a 4-year-old because my sisters and their daughters were really good friends, and we were just back and forth in their houses. Sometimes my sisters slept overnight there, and sometimes they slept overnight at our house. One of the times that I wandered into that house, there was only one man there. And I can't remember now whether there was the wife of this man who was running this place, whether she was there or if it was just that man. But he was drunk. He picked me up and carried me out in the yard, and he took me to 2 or 3 of the outhouses in the neighborhood. He molested me. He didn't really hurt me. He made me really curious, but it left a mark on me. I mean, it was a thing that followed me all the rest of my life. It's probably the reason why I got involved in sex when I was in my teenage years before I got married. I had a boyfriend when I was 15 who was really nice to me. He bought me all kinds of things and took me out to the movies, and he was about 6 years older than me, and he introduced me to sex. He was probably an alcoholic too. That's the only thing I can think. He was 20. He could drink at that time. The age limit was 18. He could buy beer and he could drink. And he got so that he was stalking me. He would tell me that he had people watching me while I was in school, that he knew what I was doing all the time. And he threatened me. That when I finally broke up with him, I was telling him, and we had a struggle over a gun. He was going to kill himself. He did all kinds of things to make me feel sorry for him and to try to keep me in line. I did break up with him. And I started going with my first husband. I went with him the rest of the way through, well, as far as I went through high school, because he was 2 years ahead of me, and of course, since I'd already been introduced to sex, kept on with that. He was my boyfriend for a whole year. But I finally discovered that I was pregnant. And so we were married when I was 16 and he was 18. You hear a lot about that now. That stuff is out in the open. But back then, you know, I was ashamed. And I dropped out of school, had my baby. One of my sisters wanted me to go back to school. She said she would take care of my baby, but I was so ashamed that I would not go back to school. In the meantime, my young husband, while I was pregnant, got drafted into the Navy. And he went and was gone for, he was actually gone for 3 years, but part of that time he was in training in New Orleans, and I followed him there and stayed there for a year with my tiny little baby. My dad said I couldn't do that, so I bought my train ticket and went anyway. And one of the things that I do say that since I've been in this program is lots of times I know I need to do something, and I cry, and I do it anyway. I don't know whether the tears are add strength to me or what. Anyway, I went to New Orleans and stayed for a year, and when I came back, I was pregnant again. And in the meantime, my daddy got married. And I came back to his house, but I couldn't get along with my stepmother very well. She didn't like it because I had baby clothes around and dirty diapers and things like that. She just didn't like me anyway. And so one night I heard her fighting with my dad, and I went downstairs, and she said, "Where are you going, honey?" And I said, "I don't know, but I'm not going to stay here, not with you." And I called her a couple of names, and she got really mad. Well, anyway, that's when they decided that I needed to live by myself, that I was now a family with two babies. And so I lived until my husband came home in this little house. And no running water. I had to go outside and pump the water. We had an outhouse. We did have electricity, and I had a telephone. I had a hot plate for a stove. And I lived like that until my husband came home from service. And he didn't like that. He didn't like where we were living. So we still stayed there, but my husband was not, oh, what do I want to say? He was still a little kid yet, even though he'd been in service, and he came back home very, very angry. He wanted to do things. He still wanted to be that teenager. I'm sure that's what it was. He didn't want to grow up and be the father and be the caretaker. That job was all left up to me. He told me I shouldn't hug my babies. I'd make sissies out of them. That's not exactly the word he used. It was more like I might turn them into homosexuals. And I thought, how can you do that with a little tiny baby? But that was his theory. Wasn't a touching, loving person, except when he wanted sex. And he was very angry. He wasn't the alcoholic. That person came much later in my life. Anyhow, I'm jumping all over this thing, and I know I am. When I decided to divorce my second husband was when I came to Al-Anon. And like I said, I started going over this, over and over, this life that I'd lived. And what I discovered was that every one of my sisters, like I said, had married alcoholics. Every once in a while, somebody would show up at my house that wasn't supposed to be there. My sisters would go on vacation, and, well, she's free over here. She must be hurting. She must be needing some attention. I guess that's what they thought. Anyhow, that's what they did. That stopped once I started going with Jerry and once I married him. I think maybe one of my sisters might have had a little alcohol problem. She's no longer living. She had developed Alzheimer's disease at an early age. She was 67 when she died, and she had just kind of disappeared into herself. And that's one of the reasons why I'm afraid when I keep forgetting things like I do and lose my train of thought like I do, that, oh boy, maybe this is going to happen to me too. Because I have two older sisters who are both at the point in their Alzheimer's disease where they can be talking right along to you and then they turn around and say, now, who are you again? I hope I don't get like that. But the way I'm talking right now, it feels like maybe... Well, I just came back from visiting my sisters in Flint, and I didn't get to any Al-Anon meetings while I was there. I was there for 2.5 weeks, and I can tell you that that's way too long to not go to a meeting. I need to be reminded all the time that for the reason that I'm here, and that I need all of you people. I love all of you people. I can't live without all of you people. My favorite thing to do when I'm in a meeting is to pick out the new person that comes into the room. And I go to that person and hug them. And I tell them that this is a good place for them to be and that we love them and we want them back. And that's about the best kind of service work I can do at this time. I did try a little service work. I did try carrying and ordering literature and things like that at one time. But I just don't like the responsibility of that. I'm sorry. And I don't have the knowledge to do all the things that some of you people do with your computers. I just don't know how to do that. My kids keep telling me, Mom, you need to do this. You need to keep in touch with us. I haven't told you anything about my older boys. There are five of them. They're 6 years from the oldest one down to the youngest. I surely had my hands full when I had all those little boys. When I went to work in the shop, I felt really, really guilty for having left them. And usually teenagers were my babysitters at that time. My husband had promised that he would help take care of those kids, and that lasted maybe about 3 or 4 months, and he was out running with high school kids, because they played football and baseball and all that kind of stuff that he liked. So he was not very responsible, I guess, as a parent. And I worried and worried. But I finally had to settle down and say, I can't be constantly thinking about what's going on at home and do my job here either. So I had to stop doing that. But with my sons, I think I might have one who might have a little alcohol problem. He has a big smoking problem, too. Three of my sons live in Florida now, all in the same place, same community. I've been going through some stuff lately, watching these hurricanes come through. When my one son went down there, I said, what are you going to do when a hurricane comes? And he said, I'm going to just sit tight, let it blow over. And I thought, yeah, well, wait until one does. Well, boy, they got three this year. And three of them went where the storms went where they were. Fortunately, they're not by water, and so they haven't had any flooding, and they have had very little damage. But after the whole thing, one of my sons, the one that drinks quite a lot and smokes quite a lot, had a stroke in the middle of one of those hurricanes. And his wife couldn't get him to the doctor or to the hospital, which was just down the road, for about 8 to 10 hours after he'd had this stroke. I've talked to him since then, and he's doing okay, but he does have to have this carotid artery thing done again. He'd had one and knew that the other one was clogged some, but it was not operable at the time. But like I said, one of the things that I learned here was that I had to let go and let God, and I had to do that all the time through that hurricane. I did watch all the news, watched where they were, and I kept saying, take care of them, take care of them. And that's the best thing that's happened to me since I've been in this program, is that I do have that spiritual thing that I can reach out to and that I can believe in, that I know that things are going to go the way they're supposed to go, that I can't do anything about it, but God can and God will. And I have to apologize for jumping all over this story like I've done. But, like I said, I'm at this point where I'm not quite sure sometimes of whether I'm going to remember all the things that is that I need to tell you. But I think that's a warning that maybe I'm done. Thank you for listening to me, folks. I'm sorry that I stammer and stutter like I do. But I'm so grateful to all of you who are in this program. I'm so grateful that it is here and that I had some place to go when I thought that my whole world had come to an end. And it happens every once in a while. You know, you think, oh boy, here we go again. But this is part of life. And this is part of life. And we do have to learn how to live our own lives, not let anybody mistreat us, to take good care of the little kid that's still down inside of each and every one of us. Somebody told me when I first came in the program that I should get a picture of me as a baby and carry that picture in my billfold and not do anything to hurt that little kid. I don't know whether I'm doing something to hurt that little kid right now or not, but I think it's good for that little kid to hear me cry. But that little kid is still in there, the one that has been mistreated, and not through my family's fault, but from outside forces, things that just happen in this world every day. I'm fortunate that I didn't get treated worse than what I did, because I had to watch out for myself an awful lot. I felt alone most of the time. And since I've been in Al-Anon, I don't feel alone all the time. And I thank you for listening to me. It's my story. I left a lot out. I know I did. Pardon me? Norman is home. I haven't talked about Norman, have I? Norman was one of my boyfriends in high school. And I'd been single for quite a long time, and he knew I was single. His wife passed away, and 2 years later, he came up and looked me up. That's how I got to Davenport from Michigan. I've been here, like I said, I've been here about 8 years now. I'm really glad to meet all you people that I hadn't quite met yet. You know, I knew that there were more friends out there, and here you are. And here I am, and now I'm done.